Hello, and welcome to Control Risks Africa podcast on our EMEA channel. Each month, we will be exploring major stories in the world of politics and business in the region and bring together our team of analysts and guest speakers to unpack these events. And today, I'm delighted to be joined by two of my colleagues from our Johannesburg office to discuss the pivotal elections that we've got coming up in South Africa on the 29th of May. We've got Wayne Malchus, our managing partner for the Southern Africa region. Hi, Wayne.
Thank you, Vincent. Good to be here.
And Michael Bongani-Reinders, one of our experts covering South Africa. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Vincent. Nice to join today.
Yes, it's fantastic to have you both here. So why pivotal? Well, because after 30 years of utterly dominating South Africa's politics since the end of apartheid in 1994, the African National Congress of President Cyril Ramaphosa for the first time runs a serious risk of falling below 50% of the votes in the general elections. And that would see the ANC lose its majority in parliament, and that would throw South Africa into a whole new untested era of coalition government. So let's set the scene with some numbers first. The last time we had a national elections, that was in 2019, the ANC won 57% of the vote. Now, if we look at the latest poll from Ipsos, a respected international pollster that came out on the 27th of April, support from the ANC has fallen barely over 40%. The party is still well ahead of the two main opposition parties, that is the Liberal Democratic Alliance, or the DA, at 22%, and the left-wing Economic Freedom Fighters, EFF, at about 12%. But the ANC is also facing a new challenge from a new party that was created a few months ago by former President Jacob Zuma, known as MK. And also we have a bunch of smaller parties in the race. So these numbers from polls have triggered a lively debate about opinion polls in general and their accuracy ahead of the elections. So I want to turn to you, Michael, first. What do you make of these polls? What will determine the election results?
I think you make a very good point mentioning the polls and how much they've sparked conversations and debates in South Africa, even in our own offices, speaking about what these different numbers mean. And I think something that we've generally agreed upon is that the polls are correct in determining the current trend in what we're going to see in terms of the results in the lead up to the election. So, as you mentioned before, the ANC will see a decline from its 57% in 2019. A party like the MK party, or Mkhonto we Sizwe party, of former President Jacob Zuma is disrupting the current numbers in the elections, looking at trying to take away votes from the ANC that had gone to the Economic Freedom Fighters, or EFF, as you mentioned. But I think one dynamic that we're looking at is the fact that the polls in South Africa do not generally very accurately reflect the exact number that we're likely to see in the elections. There are a number of dynamics around this. As you mentioned, Ipsos is a very reputable pollster. They've got a really good methodology going to all the different provinces, all nine of our provinces, both urban and rural areas, doing face-to-face polling, which is different from some of the other polling agencies that may do more telephonic randomized phone calls, which doesn't necessarily reflect the electorate. There's just a couple of elements around the Ipsos poll and polling in general that I want to caution our listeners about when it comes to putting all your money on the polls. And the first element is when it comes to South Africa's electorate, we have quite a volatile electorate. So, for example, going into these elections, we've got about 27.7 million registered voters of around 40 million eligible voters. And going into the election, that is a set number. You can't register leading up to the election. So the 27.7 million are those registered voters. We also have a trend of low voter turnout. So, for example, in the last election in 2019, there were around 66% voter turnout. So if we look at a similar number in this election, we're looking at anywhere between 60% would be around 16 to around 18, 19 million voters. That is a very different picture from 27.7 million. And the Ipsos poll specifically has altered there and kind of done their analysis according to that number of 27.7 million and can't necessarily take into consideration that lower voter turnout per se. Another dynamic that is worth mentioning is that in the Ipsos poll, they also found that almost a third of voters have said they're undecided at this point, less than a month until the election. And there's a dynamic of around 10% of that poll voting for smaller parties or not sure which exact party they want to vote for. And I think that with South Africa, because we have a proportional representation system with parliamentary seats, there is a threshold. So there are 70 plus parties that are contesting this election, but there may be a number of smaller parties in specific regions or provinces that don't get to a threshold to qualify for a seat. And that's going to favor bigger parties like the current ruling African National Congress. So all that to say is that there are many more elements that come into the election and the numbers that will come out on the day versus the polling themselves. So yes, the ANC will lose votes. Yes, we're seeing a rise in some of these opposition parties. But what's more likely to happen is that we're going to be ruled by a bit of uncertainty up until the results come out. Because an example I like to use is that in South Africa, for example, if it rains on election day, a lot of people might not go vote. And so we do have a somewhat volatile electorate. We have a public holiday on our electoral day, a lot of unregistered voters, a lot of registered voters who will likely not vote. And so all of that means that while the polling, as I said before, can indicate the trends, we don't want to get bogged down in the specific numbers and more say that we're looking at these trends and how that might play out.
So it sounds like not all is lost for the ANC, and I think there may have been an element of panic around these latest figures. But still, as you said, the long-term trend is a decline, and probably a decline that has become more rapid in the last few years. Wayne, maybe just to turn to you, 6 years ago when Ramaphosa came to power, there was a sense of renewal, and a sense of a new direction for the country. And I remember some of commentators in the media even talking of Ramaphoria. Clearly that hasn't really lasted. So what's happened since?
Well, so you're right. During 6 years ago, just after Jacob Zuma administration, with the allegations of state capture coming to the fore, there was just a general sense of euphoria when President Ramaphosa took office. He took office on the back of the new dawn of, yes, 10 years have been lost, but we go into this new dawn with a new administration with a focus on service delivery, fighting corruption, and issues that resonated with the population. What had happened since is that we've seen that Ramaphosa and the power play and the power configuration within the African National Congress was a major factor in him being able to execute on some of these policies or some of these promises that he had made. And the ANC very much, now, yes, indeed, there's the ANC as a ruling party, there's also government. But whatever the ANC does or the trends within the ANC does flow into government. So it literally what had happened is that Ramaphosa was not that secure in terms of all the factions within the African National Congress. And you'd have seen that playing out year after year with problems and strife within the National Executive Committee of the ANC, as well as incidents such as Palapala, which is the matter where the president actually allegedly hid money in a couch. So there wasn't a formal investigation to that. Ramaphosa's also, that's partly and a major contributor to why he has not been able to act or execute on those promises. But another one too that commentators have frequently joked about is inaction. They call him Mr. Inaction figure, which is sorry, somewhat unfair, but he also takes very long to come to decisions. So on matters that would have been fairly straightforward, you find the president just procrastinating and not getting to a point. Some say it's because of he's trying to consult. I'm not too sure about that. But all these, to summarize, the factional battles within the ANC, the Ramaphosa's own approach to dealing with disputes and conflict within the ANC, that contributed to a sense to a situation where literally he was bound to fail in a sense. He was bound to not meet the expectations of the people and to fulfill the promises that he had made with the so-called new dawn of the ANC. So the ANC has for a year, time and time again, the rejuvenation, the revitalization, and the new dawn, and putting new blood in the ANC, but in essence, it's still the same. So yes, he has had some factors within the ruling party, but also his own inability to really control the situation and exercise authority, partly himself to blame, I would think. That is basically resulting in a situation where we have unbroken, or we have these promises that have not been fulfilled.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you've depicted really well the inner workings, the internal dynamics to decision making that have led to this outcome. I think obviously there's also the track record and what has dominated headlines, and what I'm sure will be driving the electorate as well, as a string of frankly quite bad news, you know, from the electricity crisis, which is, you know, probably the worst of it all. But also lately we've had a string of layoffs in the mining industry. So there's a lot, there seems to be that the mood of the nation, at least seen from outside South Africa, seems to be quite despondent. And then I thought, you know, when I visited in February and Ramaphosa was giving his State of the Nation address at SONA, it was quite interesting to see him really playing up, reminding people of the ANC's liberation credentials, going back, drawing a long arc from 1994. That was probably quite helpful to obscure the more problems of the here and now. Michael, I'm curious to hear if you think that strategy will work. Can you maybe talk us through some of the different scenarios that we're looking at in terms of the election outcomes?
You make a good point in terms of the approach of the ANC in the lead up to this election, trying to lean back on their both anti-apartheid struggle credentials as well as the first maybe decade or so of their rule, but trying to then kind of leave kind of a bit of a gap and not really look at the last decade and a half that has led to a lot of the challenges and been contributing to the challenges we're experiencing. So one of the dynamics that we're looking at in these elections is the fact that the ANC has a track record, sure, but it also has a very strong base. And I think part of that leads to what we're looking at as our baseline scenario for this election. And essentially what we are forecasting is that the ANC will remain in power after the May 29 elections in one of two ways. So in the first way, it would be the ANC maintaining a slim majority, using its base, kind of going against the polls themselves, still dropping from 57% to maybe a 51%, which is still a considerable drop, but not dropping below that 50%, and therefore able to maintain the majority without there being major shifts in terms of how they govern. In the second option or second way that the ANC would remain in power in our baseline scenario would be the ANC does drop below 50%, but only a few percentage points to around 47-48%. And in this scenario, or in this option of the scenario, the ANC would be able to once again maintain its power without having to make a lot of concessions, because it would go into coalition with a few of the smaller parties in government. For example, the Good Party led by Patricia de Lille is effectively in coalition with the ANC at the moment. Patricia de Lille is a cabinet minister, and this is likely to remain the case post the elections, whether the ANC drops below 50% or not. There's a few other smaller parties like an Al-Jamaa, which is currently in coalition with the ANC in the Johannesburg Metropolitan Municipality, where the Al-Jamaa councillor is the mayor of Johannesburg, one of the biggest cities and the economic hub of South Africa, due to this alliance with the ANC. And so what we would then see is that the ANC would still remain in power, would still keep its policy continuity without there being a massive shift, because it's unlikely to need to make massive concessions to these smaller parties, maybe give a ministerial position or deputy ministerial position. And what we would see then is policy continuity, but part of the dynamics of that is the challenges around policy. And I think that's something that we've seen a lot of in terms of policy uncertainty, etc. In terms of an alternative scenario that we look at is the scenario which would maybe be kind of more towards what the polls are pointing towards, is that the ANC drops well below 50%. So below 45% would put them in a position where they would not be able to go into coalition with enough of these smaller parties to gain a majority in parliament. And then what they'd have to do is start looking to bigger parties. So one of the, let's say, medium parties is the Inkatha Freedom Party, the IFP, which would then be a middle ground. They're likely to get around 3-4%, or that's what they've gotten around that amount in 2019. But what we would then see is the bigger opposition parties coming into the conversation. So we've got the DA that you mentioned before, the main opposition at the moment, the EFF, and then MK Party. And the dynamics get a bit more complicated when it comes to these scenarios, because what you're looking at is also a lot of the people, the policies, as well as the party and their numbers. So for example, the DA has a more liberal approach. They've in the past said they were unwilling, their whole election strategy is to stop what they're calling a doomsday coalition between the ANC, EFF and MK party to try and drum up support for them and their allies as part of the multi-party charter, which is a group of opposition parties, excluding the EFF and MK, who have kind of come together in a, so to speak, gentleman's agreement with nothing binding, but the notion of saying that should we get enough votes together, we would form a coalition government. So the DA is coming from that angle, but we've also spoken to some high-ranking members in the DA who have said that the party would be open to discussing coalitions with anyone. And I think that in a scenario where, for example, Ramaphosa stays at the helm of the ANC, even though they drop below 45%, they may lean more towards a more liberal DA coalition than, on the other hand, an EFF coalition, which is really radical. The EFF and the MK party, with the support of former President Zuma, have very clearly come out anti-ANC and are particularly anti-Ramaphosa. And so it seems less likely that they would go into a coalition with a Ramaphosa-led ANC should the ANC drop to a lower number. But then the dynamics come in around Ramaphosa's ability to maintain this power after the election should the ANC drop to 40%, which would be a monumental drop of over 17% since the last election. And that then comes into the dynamics that Wayne was speaking about before, that idea of Ramaphosa's control within the party and to what extent those factions would be able to oust him. And then if you're going into those scenarios, which kind of it starts kind of snowballing to an extent, then maybe in a scenario where there's a post-Ramaphosa ANC, with, say, a different, more friendly, more radical-leaning faction in power, then an EFF-MK party coalition comes into the scenarios. But in essence, just to kind of wrap it up again, it's just the same sense that we still see the ANC likely to remain in power, either through a slim majority or a coalition with smaller parties, and only in an alternative where they have a massive loss of support, an unprecedented loss, would they need to then consider one of these larger parties, and then are kind of leading to all those other dynamics.
Can I just come in on that point? I think Michael's dead right. We, instead of focusing on polling numbers, we're looking at these various scenarios that does it gives us a good sense of what may come. Now, I just want to comment on two issues that Michael touched on. If the ANC has to go into any form of coalition, that will weaken Ramaphosa's position in the African National Congress. He's already weak as it is. So, and the sharks are circling. That he knows. And the ideal for them is, even if it's just a 50+1%, in the region of 50.5% or 51%, they will be happy with, not ideal outcome, but they will be happy with that outcome. The minute he drops below that number, it requires coalitions. And he knows that within the ANC, even with his the deputy president waiting in the wings and other factions that were still within the ANC, they haven't left for MKP or so forth, they will make a point of targeting Ramaphosa, because he will be weakened at that. The second point, I just want to quickly touch on this MKP. Questions have come up. Is the MK party what they call a false flag? Is it just something done by some faction in the ANC or by others to distract? And our assessment is that MKP is not a false flag. It's not a distraction. It is indeed an expression of a certain former ANC members, including the former president, Jacob Zuma, to find some alternative to the ANC, to the African National Congress. You also see how they coalesce around the radical economic transformation chaps. So they are a disruptor, and they. I'm sure Michael will comment on this later, but they will weaken the ANC minimally nationally, but more so at the provincial level, and more particularly KwaZulu-Natal. So those two issues are things that we just have to keep in mind, just the MKP and well as the coalition, Ramaphosa's position.
We'll be right back to the discussion As you may know, Control Risk does a lot of work in South Africa, supporting a whole range of organizations. We have a presence in Johannesburg and Cape Town. So if you want to find out more, reach us via our website or feel free to contact us directly. Just going through these different scenarios, I think, tells a good picture of how we're entering a new phase that is probably a lot more unsettled in South African politics. You know, that you might even have a new leader, as you just said, Wayne, come June. But even if the ANC managed to stay in power and in control, if that trend of decline isn't arrested, well, then you just push the issue forward 5 years down the road. And in 2029, you'll have an election that is even more closely fought. So either way, coalitions are here to stay. We're entering a period that is less stable, a bit more volatile from a policy point of view. And Michael, I wanted to ask you, on from a business point of view now, what are the areas of government policy or the sectors that you feel stand to be the most affected by these potential big policy shifts after the election?
I want to quickly just comment on the coalition dynamic, because it leads to the policy question. Is, as you mentioned, it's uncertain. We're saying that there is a small chance of coalition at a national level, but it's almost guaranteed that there'll be a coalition, an increase in coalition politics at a provincial level, especially in the Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal provinces, as Wayne mentioned before, whereby now you're having to have horse trading at that level, as we've already seen at a municipal level, which has happened since the local government elections in 2021, and has not necessarily signified a positive shift towards coalition government, that it's more towards this uncertainty. We've seen breakdowns of coalitions, mayors ousted, councils in disarray, factions fighting against each other within parties, within coalitions. And what that has led to is a lot of instability. And a lot of that has then driven a lack of service delivery and a lot of challenges at a municipal level. And I think what we're going to see post the election, we're going to see this playing out at a provincial level in KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng and perhaps a few other provinces. And then increasingly at a national level, whereby even where the ANC maintains power through a slim majority or is in coalition with a few smaller parties, they don't have the solid majority that they've had for the past 30 years to push through their policies. And we're going to see a lot more questions and challenges from opposition parties, from coalition partners. In our baseline scenario, where the ANC maintains its power, it essentially would mean business as usual. And business as usual at the moment in South Africa is policy uncertainty. And we see this playing out in a number of sectors. So, for example, the energy sector is one of the clear examples of a crisis when it comes to policy and implementation. We have different sectors of government, different departments and individuals saying contradictory policies, from the government saying that they're going to prioritize a just energy transition, as with our plans that we've presented at COP over the last few years, to other parts of the government saying we're going to double down and extend the life of our coal power plants, which at the moment are part of the challenges to our power crisis. And what we're unlikely to see is this improving post-elections. What we're likely to see is that the ANC and its partners will maintain most of the control. There won't be massive shifts in who the individuals are heading up these departments, barring a kind of alternative or catastrophic situation for the ANC where they're forced out or they have to kind of make concessions with major parties. And what that means is, even in sectors like the mining sector, which has gone through a lot of challenges in South Africa over the last few years due to there being stagnation in regulatory, we've been wanting to bring in a new cadastral system, which is being delayed, which hasn't happened yet. We have massive logistical challenges from state-owned enterprise Transnet, with the ports and rails not functioning properly, affecting the ability for extractives to be, commodities to be taken out of the country. And I think that one of the challenges that will continue to play out is this uncertainty. And so in these sectors and other sectors, companies and businesses operating in South Africa, looking to invest in South Africa, won't necessarily have a solution or a certain policy position post the elections, and will continue to have to operate in this challenging environment and have to kind of focus on the resiliency to do that.
The other question, and maybe we'll end there, but another question we've been asked a lot lately is on the security side. And you know, many of you listening will remember the wave of civil unrest that we had in parts of South Africa in July 2021, almost 3 years ago now. It was the worst violence that South Africa experienced since the end of apartheid. You had over 350 people killed, massive destruction of private property in parts of the country. Now, we know we're heading into this election in a fairly tense social and political context. We've talked about mining layoffs. We've got the candidacy of MK Party probably adding a bit of fuel to this. Wayne, are we concerned that, you know, we could head into a rather turbulent or even violent election, and what are the main hotspots to watch?
You know, many of our clients do ask us that question because July 2021 was a to them an outlier. To many, it was an outlier, but it happened. So it brings to the fore that South Africa has some inherent problems, security problems. However, if I look at the way we analyzed July 2021 and the subsequent events, it was indeed catastrophic. But if we look at the underlying circumstances and factors in the situation on the ground now, including KwaZulu, the provinces of KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng, we do not see the same situation arising again to the same extent. If you recall, 2021 was lack of police, law enforcement response, et cetera, et cetera. That was even the commission of inquiry that came up during the commission of inquiry. So we don't foresee the same situation coming up again. So Africa too doesn't have a history of election violence. We have sporadic incidents of, you know, clashes, posters being taken down, clashes between people, and declaration of no-go areas. But we never had situations such as what has happened in some other countries, but also such as July 2021, where it's complete, in a sense, almost a shutdown, and where the economy of certain parts of the country just comes to a complete halt. We don't envisage or project that the same situation will arise during this prior or even post the elections. With that, we do advise certain of our clients, depending on where they're located. For instance, in KwaZulu-Natal, irrespective of the elections, it's always a high-risk area simply because of the security environment with attacks and targeted killings in that area and hit squads literally running around in KwaZulu-Natal. Government ministers saying that KwaZulu-Natal is the hotbed for the origin of hit squads. So meaning you source your hit squads, your attackers, your assassins from KwaZulu-Natal. So we would say that, yes, depending on where you are located, to develop resilience, your preparedness for situations that may arise, short of something like July 2021, which we doubt will happen again.
And if I can just kind of add in there, I think as Wayne said very, very well, is that July 2021 was anomalous. It was a perfect storm in the sense that there were so many factors that led to it, including a really harsh COVID lockdown, a catalytic event of the former President Jacob Zuma being arrested, and the general frustration in terms of the population paired with that underpreparedness from the security services. And one thing we've been saying to our clients when they ask this is that because July 2021 happened, it's much less likely to happen again as well. In the fact that the security services have addressed a lot of those deficiencies. There's a lot of preparedness, especially around the election, the deployment of police officers, the potential to deploy the army or military if needed. And I think something that is also a factor that I mentioned before is our election day is a public holiday. Most South Africans aren't voting by far. That we won't see a lot of election violence or any on election day per se. What I think our clients also need to look at is specific triggers post-election. So for example, as Wayne mentioned, KwaZulu-Natal, that's where the MK party is very active. The EFF is contesting some of the places there, as well as the IFP. Let's say, for example, in a specific ward post-election, there's a contestation about the results. 2-3 weeks after the election, the magistrate's court is sitting to hear this. That could then be a hotspot for unrest, for violence, for specific supporters being mobilized. But on a mass scale, even across the province or across the country, still, as Wayne said, highly unlikely. And there are a lot of resilience measures being put in place by the government. And I think also a lot of companies are preparing themselves differently than they would have if July 2021 didn't happen. So it's definitely something we don't see as a major threat.
Right. And that's at least a positive note to end. We're going to have to leave it there. But thank you very much, Michael, Wayne, for joining me today. It was fantastic to hear from you. And I'm sure we'll hear a lot more from you and the rest of the team in South Africa after the elections on the 29th of May. You can read more of our team's analysis on South Africa and the rest of Sub-Saharan Africa by going on our website. That's www.controlrisk.com. And of course, feel free to reach out to us via the website or on LinkedIn if you'd like to continue the conversation. And please don't forget to subscribe to our MAI in Focus podcast to hear more from our team across the region. Next month, we will be turning to Nigeria and reflect with our analysts in Lagos on what has been a rather eventful first year in office for the new president, Bola Tinubu. And with that, it's goodbye for now and see you next time.